No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 40 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on the Commentist Network. You can find that at thecommentist.com. And of course, you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will find out where in the world Andy is and then dive into the mailbag, where we will answer listener emails, questions, and comments. So, Andy, where are you at?
Paul, I like the way that you said episode 40.
Thank you.
So much enthusiasm.
The big 4-0.
Big 4-0. Yeah, and I think that I have not discussed this with you. I think I want to try and make every 10 episodes a mailbag episode, because we have so many comments and questions and whatnot that build up over the years.
I'm down with that. Over the years, over the 1 years that we've done this.
Over the less than 1 year we've done this. Anyway, so I am currently in the beautiful, smoggy city of Los Angeles. I'm actually parked in my van about one block from the Pacific Ocean.
Ooh.
And it is wonderful out here. But as I mentioned on last week's episode, I had too many great places to talk about to fit into one episode in a timely manner. So I'm going to backtrack just a second. And I went to Arizona, but on my way there, I stopped in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
That is an amazing name.
Great name. Population, 6,400 people.
Amazing population.
So close to 6,666 people. But I had gotten a hot tip that there is like a juice bar kind of, healthy-ish type place there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, instead of going to Subway, I guess I'll go check this place out, and winded my way through this little town. And then on the side of the building of this place called the Turtleback Oasis, big, vegan friendly written on the side.
Nice.
And I walk in and, there's a few people in there. They're all clearly friends. And it was just like out of a movie, like everybody stops and turns and looks at me. And I'm like, I am immediately uncomfortable here.
Oh, my God.
And then they're like, oh, can we help you find something? And I was like, actually, I was looking for lunch, trying to get a sandwich. And I start looking at their little sandwich board menu thing. And the guy's like, well, we got this great turkey thing and we got this ham thing. And I was like, well, I'm actually looking for the vegan options. And I spotted they had some kind of Chipotle veggie burger. And then they also had an avocado and garlic sandwich. And the guy was like, oh, avocado and garlic is the thing to get. I was like, I like both avocado and garlic. Let me get that. And he had a dog with him. He's like, oh, I just gotta walk my dog back around the corner, drop him off, and I can come back and make you a sandwich. Is that cool? It's like, oh God, how long am I gonna be here for? So then I sat there and like waited. Eventually, the guy comes back, and he makes me the sandwich. And everybody else is in there left, so I'm just sitting in this store all by myself while he's in the back. And then like another person came in and was standing at the counter, waiting to order, and this guy was taking so long to make the sandwich, and then he came out to ask me, do you want red onions on that, and ignored the other person there, and then and then like went in the back again for like another couple of minutes and stuff, and then he brought it out, and it was an okay sandwich.
I mean was it literally avocado and garlic and apparently red onions?
There was, so I went no red onions because that'd be the only thing I would taste for the rest of my life if I ate them. But there was also some tomato, which I did not want, some lettuce, and they used some veganaise, and he actually had to come out to their like store and like get a new bottle from the fridge so he could go back and make the sandwich. And it was just like, you ever see those bottles of like minced garlic at the grocery store?
Yeah.
It was like each slice had a spread of the veganaise and then just like a spread of that minced garlic. So it was like I could smell it through the container he brought it out to me in. And it was totally fine. It was totally adequate. It was more interesting for the story of going there in this tiny little town and the fact that it was cool that they had this place in this tiny little town.
Yeah.
Which has a great name. And so it, to me, I'm just like, this thing is spreading. Like if a place like this has a little sandwich shop where you can get some vegan options and they know what vegan means, just kind of was like a sign of the times, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So that was
that's really cool.
Turtleback Oasis. It was very fun, awkward experience for me. So anyway, then I went to Tucson, Arizona, and they got a lot going on down there. I haven't been there since I played in Tucson a handful of times with my band passing through, but that was either pre-vegan or you're on, you know, band budget where everyone gets like $5 a day to eat, so you're not really going out to restaurants. Yeah. And or we're making all our food in like a rice cooker like we used to do. So it's fun to explore a lot of these towns that I've been to, you know, previously, but not really gotten to actually do whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of traveling alone. So I went to a place called Love and Spoonfuls, and actually went because that vegan trucker on Instagram, someone who interacts with us a lot, had posted a picture from that place. So I figured that's the place I want to go. And I got this thing called the Wildcat Burger.
Hmm.
And Paul, are you a fan of the movie Speed?
I've seen it like a couple times, so I guess yes. But if you make a reference to it, I probably will not get it.
Well, you know how Dennis Hopper keeps calling Sandra Bullock's character Wildcat, and that's like a hint that like tips off Keanu Reeves as to like the fact that there's a hidden camera on the bus. Spoiler alert. Do you remember that at all?
No, I do not.
I saw Wildcat, and that was my immediate association. I went, I'm going to get that burger because it makes me think of Speed.
Oh, that's funny.
It was a really good burger, though. Like, normally house-made burgers are, like, mushy and kind of, you're just like, whatever. I could mash up some onions and black beans at home, but this was really good. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it had texture to it. It was crispy because it was on the grill. It also came with some tempeh bacon that was very crispy, some vegan blue cheese, which had like tofu chunks in it or something, but whatever the flavor, whatever they did for the flavor, they really nailed it. Grilled onions, sriracha, lettuce and pickles. It was really good. It was really good.
That blue cheese was homemade?
Seemed like it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I was definitely impressed with that. I would like to go back and try more because they had a lot of really interesting things on the menu. So that was Love and Spoonfuls. And then the last place that I'll mention is a place called Le Cave's Bakery. And the person that I was staying with, who was not vegan, but was like, there's this bakery with vegan donuts, and they're amazing. So I went down there to check it out with another friend of mine, and we walk in, and it was a very weird place. Like, no one was in it. We had to wait for someone to come out from the back. It was very large, but there was no seating or anything. And they were the home of vegetable-glazed donuts. Which just sounds really gross, but it was just like a glazed donut. And they're not like a kind of donut with a hole. It's like the kind that's filled but with no filling in it.
Yeah.
And the two of us got a variety, so I got to try a few. And they're honestly one of the best donuts I've ever had.
Hmm.
It was like, I feel like the true test of a good donut, a nice raised donut, the only true type of donut out there, is the plain glazed donut. If that is good, then that's the mark of a good vegan donut maker. And they passed the test with flying colors. So Le Cave's Bakery, what a nice little gem. It wasn't even listed on Happy Cow when I looked it up, as far as I could tell. So check out Le Cave's if you're ever in Tucson.
Le Cave's.
And, you know, of course, now I'm in Southern California, so I went to Kindred, thought about Skindred the band.
Good.
I'm only mentioning this so that we can make Skindred the closing music again.
All right, good.
So, yeah, it'll have plenty of more food adventures to come. And, Paul, I believe you got to make a little trek out to Woodstock. Tell us all about it.
I did, yes. I went to the Woodstock Animal Sanctuary's July Jamboree. Woodstock Farm Sanctuary's July Jamboree. It was awesome. I've never been there before. I've actually only been to one animal sanctuary before. That was at the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, Shindig, which I'm pretty sure is only about 20 miles away from the Woodstock Animal Sanctuary.
They're quite close.
What's that?
They are quite close to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish they could branch out to Connecticut, but you know what? Maybe I should start one. But,
Well, maybe you could just complain about it on a podcast.
Probably. To no one in particular. Someone out there, start a animal sanctuary in Connecticut. Anyways.
That's what we do best, is just yelling impotently into the void.
So it was an awesome event. It was very different from the Catskill Animal Sanctuary Shindig, in that I felt like that was very, it had a very veg-festy type feel to it. Like, there was a lot of vendors, there was like nonprofit organizations and stuff like that. Whereas this was definitely, I feel like it was, I don't know, just like a general celebration of the Woodstock Farm Sanctuary. So it did not feel very, veg festy, which I was completely okay with. So there was not, there was no, there was only a handful of food vendors. There was no, like, apparel vendors. Well, there was, like, a couple people selling jewelry, I guess. But it was just, it seemed to me very focused on, like, having people go around and tour the farm. And it was just really, really awesome. It wasn't too hot outside, which was nice. Food-wise, though, which is what I know everyone's on their edge of their seat, there was Yeah Dog, which I got. There was a place called Chickpea and Olive, which I did not get. The lines were tremendous, and I will say I've been spoiled because usually I'm helping Andy out at these events, so I get to get the food right away before the long lines. But this time I actually had to wait in the lines, which was a drag.
Like a
but,
peasant.
Yeah, like a peasant. So Chickpea and Olive, a lot of people said they had a lot of great burgers, or they had a great burger. Unfortunately, did not get to try that. And then Abba's falafel, which I've had before at some veg fests, and I love it. But they sold out before I got a chance to get some. So unfortunately, I didn't have that. And then there was a slew of bakeries. But what I had, so I immediately got there and got Like No Other, which is the vegan soft serve food truck from Rhode Island. Now, we've talked about it before. They have an actual shop in Rhode Island now, which, funnily enough, our good friend of the show, Josh, who people mistake us as brothers all the time, was at the actual shop in Rhode Island that day, and the owner there thought that he was me at the same time that I was getting Like No Other from the food truck in New York State. So just a kind of funny little thing. But anyways, got Like No Other. I got like a twist, like chocolate vanilla twist with coffee syrup and Oreo crumbles. It was delicious. Later on in the day, I got Yeah Dog, stood in that 30-minute line, and got the Marley Dog, which is just the hot dog with ruby red sauerkraut and pineapple pickle and relish. It was, I don't think I've ever gotten that flavor. It was delicious as usual. And then to top it off, I went to Gon Pie, excellent bakery at a lot of these events, wonderful people, and got a salted peanut butter brownie and a blondie, and they were both incredibly delicious.
Ugh, that sounds good.
It was very good, yes. And I did happen to run into friend of the show, Vanessa, at the animal sanctuary, so that was nice too. And then one last thing I'll say quick. Yesterday, I went to one of my favorite Connecticut restaurants, which I don't think we've talked about on the show. It's called Tolly 2, like T-O-O, because there's another restaurant called Tolly, which is an Indian restaurant, and they made a second one. So it's called Tolly 2, like Tolly as well. This is also Tolly. And I think that's the best. I think that's the best name ever. But
ever?
And it ever.
Ever.
Ever. And they're an all vegetarian, and they have on their menu, it's clearly labeled, which are vegan, which is actually most of them. And I got, I ate a lot of food there. I got these hot masala fries, which were delicious, just French fries. They had a dosa, which if you've never had that, it's just like this flaky bread that has, I got mine stuffed with like turmeric potatoes. And that was amazing. And then, Andy, have you been to Tolly 2 before?
I have.
Okay, because they've updated the menu. First of all, they're serving the menus comes on these like iPads, which is incredible now.
Oh, wow.
That's like the new thing. It's so hip. But they definitely didn't have these before. They now have something called non-itza, which is just small pizzas on naan bread.
Damn.
And a few of them have cheese on, but there are two or three vegan ones. And the one that I got was called the New Haven, because there's another place in New Haven that does a mashed potato pizza. And what the New Haven naan itza is it's like a naan bread crust, and it has mashed potatoes and like vegetarian bacon, some little pieces of this crispy bacon.
It was
so good. It was amazing. I'm definitely just going to go back there and get that because it was so good.
That makes me really want to go back because, yeah, Tolly 2 is just not one of my go-tos. There's a couple other good, more like hole-in-the-wall Indian places in New Haven that are a little cheaper and I guess more accessible to me. So Tolly is sort of my last resort Indian place in New Haven. So that's really good to know because that sounds very intriguing. I've never actually had the mashed potato pizza from Barrow. I've heard you can order it vegan, but that's really exciting for me.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great. But that's all I got for food. It's nice to get some talk time on the food section of this show.
Yes, I wish I could bring you around with me. And we could eat all this food together, Paul. That would be
just hang out in your pocket, just in your back pocket.
Be a dream come true.
All right, so let's get to the mailbag.
So yeah, we've collected up the best and most interesting emails, comments on our Instagram, and comments from our website or our podcast network's website, thecommentist.com. Collected them here to answer them. So this is just going to be a hodgepodge of all sorts of different topics and opinions on things. And I just want to start out by reading two comments first. I don't know if you're really going to have much of a response to them, but I thought they're kind of responses to things that we talked about that I thought was interesting. And so the first one comes from thecommentist.com, and Wendy, who is the nomadic vegan, wrote, "Paul, I was distraught to hear you say that vegan food can be found just about anywhere except in steakhouses and Italian restaurants. Italian food is incredibly vegan friendly. You're not the only one to have this misconception, though, which is why I'm in the process of writing a vegan guidebook to Italy that will highlight the many plant-based dishes in the local cuisine and dispel once and for all the myth that everything in Italy is smothered in cheese." And you can find more about the book at thenomadicvegan.com if you are interested. Paul, I had the same impression as you that, like, Italian food especially is just kind of, like, for me, it's not like it's, like, off limits. Like, obviously, I can make it myself very easily. But an Italian restaurant is kind of, like, the last resort if I'm, like, trying to find somewhere to eat, because I know it's just going to be, like, pasta and sauce. And even then, you know, there's egg in the pasta, so... thank you to Wendy for correcting us. I'm looking forward to checking out your guidebook and learning more about vegan Italian food.
Yeah, definitely. I want to learn about that too, because I've been to Italy before, but it was when I was really young, before I was even vegetarian. My dad was vegetarian at the time, but I didn't have that experience. But I have actually heard from one other person that lives in Italy that is Italian, that said, oh yeah, Italy is super vegan friendly. It's really easy to be vegan. And I'm like, oh, whoa. So that's really, really awesome. And I'm glad that you're putting this together. I can't wait to see the result.
Yeah. And I think also maybe some of our misconception is the result of things sort of being Americanized, so to speak.
Yeah.
You look at that even with, like, say Mexican food, and we think of that as being, like, super cheese heavy. But Lauren Ornelas, friend of the show, once pointed out to me that sort of dairy is something that was sort of brought over by people that colonized these lands, and it's not necessarily like an indigenous food. And so, like, a lot of this dairy and cheese that gets added to this cuisine is not technically traditional Mexican fare. So I guess it's just sort of something that happens when things get integrated into our culture, is it gets kind of covered in cheese. That's what we do in America, apparently.
All right, so our next comment comes from Annie. This is also from thecommentist.com, and it was in reference to episode 33, which was titled "Do Vegans Need Graphic Images to Advocate?" Oh wow, they're really calling me out on these comments. So here's the comment. Oh wait, no, this is a good thing.
Yeah, you're not being called out. You're being backed up on this one. So.
I think Paul nailed it when he said it might be humanizing non-humans a little much sometimes when talking about the best way to advocate for them. I feel that the difference between showing a video on the street of a woman being raped and showing the video of a pig being abused is that the woman can literally tell her own story in her own words in a language that humans understand. Non-humans cannot. Yes, we as animal rights advocates can tell the story of the animals on behalf of them, but they can never tell their own story like the woman can. So it just isn't as compelling as actually showing it. Neither you nor I lived that animal story like the woman lived through her own rape. I think that distinction is what affects the listeners differently. I'm not sure that graphic images are always needed, but I think it's important to remember that they are not humans, and by that very nature, the approach will be different when it comes to human versus animal rights in some aspects.
Cool. Yeah, so this was in reference to a sound clip that we did play on the show where it was sort of pointed out that, you know, certain things that we would say are okay to do to advocate for animals, we would not do to advocate for humans. And so I just wanted to include this comment just because I think it's a very well thought out response to that aspect of the discussion that we were debating.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for the comment.
All right, so now let's dive into the actual questions, and I'm going to try and order these from softball to hardball, so we'll start off with a real softball question. This one comes from VMarket Dallas on Instagram. Paul, why are your beards so beardy?
Great question, and I think Andy misspoke before. We're starting off with the most important questions first, and we're going to go from there, but I don't know. I only started using beard oil recently, and I don't really use it that much. So if people out there think you need beard oil to have good beards, you probably don't need it. I'm sure it helps, but I don't know. I don't really do anything. Just kind of sit there and wait. It kind of grows.
Just let puberty take effect, and it's all downhill from there.
As hair does.
I was going to say, we could just turn this into an infomercial for the Fanciful Fox and their wonderful beard oil, which I do use. But
Which is, I will say, the one beard oil that I do use, too.
Yes, so shout out to Fanciful Fox there.
Yeah.
Thank you to VMarket Dallas for starting us off with a silly question. Our next one is an email, which comes from Greg T. and says, "Hey, guys, I'm absolutely loving the podcast. I've been trying to find more like it, but not having much luck, so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions / what are your favorite podcasts to listen to?" Paul, what do you listen to?
Well, I don't know if I could give any suggestions about other similar podcasts, because unfortunately, as much as I've tried to get into podcasts that will like give me knowledge and like benefit me and get me thinking and stuff like that, it's just really not the type of podcast that I like to listen to. I if I'm being completely honest, I only really listen to comedy podcasts, which isn't always the most beneficial, but you know what? It makes me feel good, so I guess it's okay. My two main podcasts that I listen to are Comedy Bang Bang, which is an improv comedy podcast that I think is amazing. And then How Did This Get Made, which is three comedians and usually a guest that just listen to, they watch a very, very bad movie and then just talk about it for an hour and a half. And it's usually pretty hilarious. So those are the two podcasts that I mostly listen to. I'm sorry that I do not really have any suggestions for very similar podcasts to what ours are. Andy?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Paul in that the stuff that I choose to listen to is usually not the most informative, although I do listen to, say, like Radiolab and Freakonomics and things of those that nature. I do listen to, but those aren't my go-tos. I actually also love How Did This Get Made. I'm a big fan of Doug Loves Movies, and another one that I listen to basically every episode that they put out, regardless of the topic, is the Slash Filmcast. And actually, anyone, I don't think Paul does not realize this, but anyone who listens to our film review episodes will see that we definitely mimic that format in a lot of our in many ways in our show. We do kind of mimic their format because I think it's a very well done podcast. As far as similar podcasts go, this probably will not be a surprise to anyone, but obviously the Vegan Warrior Princesses Attack podcast, mm-hmm, I think, is the closest to us. And some might say we're the closest to them because they've been doing it for longer than us and also come out on a more consistent basis. So if anyone...
We've been good recently.
What? Yeah,
we've been pretty good recently.
We've been really nailing it lately.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Vegan Warrior Princesses Attack, we did do a collaboration episode with them because they reached out to us. And I would definitely recommend them. If it's very similar to our show, and that's two really good friends talking about similar types of issues. Obviously, they bring their own perspective because we're us and they are them. And they always have really, really interesting topics. And I would highly recommend checking them out. I also do like the Witchside podcast, which is more of a long form interview show. And I think that if you like our politics on this show and our kind of worldview, I think you would like them. The two hosts are I'd say pretty similar in that regard. It's a very relaxed kind of interview, much more of a conversation than a structured interview. But they get like a wide variety of guests on that show, and they have like, I don't know, I want to say like 150 episodes out or something like that. Like they have like a ton of episodes out. So I definitely like that as well. But as far as vegan podcasts, those are the only two that I consistently listen to. So check them out.
Yeah. I always feel bad when people ask me what podcasts I listen to, because I have a friend that'll be like, oh yeah, I listened to this podcast on like quantum physics the other day. I learned so much from it. And I'm like, oh, I'm listening to comedy podcasts.
Yeah. It's, I mean, to me, it's just kind of, it's my like escape. It's something that I just like to sit there and not think about all the horrible things that are going on in the world. So
yeah, oh, definitely.
I feel like there's a lot of really valid reasons to listen to more comedy podcasts. Cause
yeah, that's true.
The world is shit, Paul.
And on that note, let's get to our next question. next question was this was from Instagram, I believe.
Yes.
It comes from the user Emily McGlory. Emily McGlory. Sorry. And it says, Andy, I'm really interested in learning about how Compassion Co. got its start. What made you decide to live in your van and travel the country to sell your rad shirts and merch? Was it a hard decision with lots of sacrifices, or is it less traumatic than I imagine it to be?
Well, thank you for the question, Emily. I'm going to try and keep this brief because I could talk about this at super, super long length. But I will say, if you want to hear me talk more about this kind of stuff, I would recommend checking out an interview I did on the Grape Cat podcast. And to a lesser extent, because I don't talk about the business as much on it, but I did an interview on Edgeland podcast, which does talk about these things. But to keep it brief and not talk about me too much. But
which I know
bit.
You love to do.
I could talk about me all day long, Paul. I don't know if you know this, but I'm pretty awesome. So I guess I don't know how often we really spell this out on the show. I run Compassion Company. It's a vegan clothing line. Everything's sweatshop free, organic, or recycled, USA made. And I've been running it for about 5 years. And I just started because, and I feel like every vegan t-shirt maker that I know had the same story, where they were trying to find shirts that they wanted to wear and they just weren't finding them. Because obviously lots of people have different tastes and styles and whatnot. So I had some friends that are graphic designers. I had a friend that's a screen printer, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to just do this. So I started out small and was living in Connecticut, went to Veg Fests all around, you know, the Northeast. And then I was touring with Farm for 6 months on, 6 months off, and I had the 6 month period where I was like, you know what, I don't want to find another job. Let me just go to every single Veg Fest I possibly can. And so I, you know, charted out a route, and it went really well. And so I just really enjoyed life on the road. I've always been in bands or touring with nonprofits. And so it was not hard or a sacrifice to choose to live in a van. To me, it was just sort of a natural extension of what I was doing. Cause to me, I was like, oh, I do the best when I get my shirts in front of people. And that means going to Veg Fests. And I like traveling. I like living in small spaces in my vehicle. So to me, it's not really a sacrifice, other than I'm not near Paul,
aww,
you know, constantly. So that is sad, but we do have the wonders of Skype. So that's the decision to do that was just sort of both out of necessity and also just sort of designing a life around what I like to do, which is travel, meet really cool people, spend time with friends, go to cool vegan restaurants. And this is the best way to make that happen. And in a way that I can feel the most comfortable with myself, you know, as far as producing something for the world. So that's probably not as brief as I was hoping it would be. And I hope that answers your question, but definitely go check out those other podcast interviews as well.
Cool. Very cool.
All right, so now we're going to get into things a bit more complex. So this email comes from Kelsey S. And Kelsey actually sent this like an hour after we recorded our last mailbag episode a few months ago. So this one's been sitting on the back burner for quite a while. So apologies to Kelsey for taking so long to get to this. But Kelsey wrote us a really wonderful email, and then in it included this. They said, I was wondering how you both feel about renaming vegan versions of meat products so that they don't reference the meat. For example, instead of saying vegan sausage, coming up with an entirely different name for it that does not rely on sausage. I started thinking about this because I often hear okonomiyaki referred to as Japanese pizza as a way to explain it to people unfamiliar with it. However, this is a completely inaccurate description. If I had never heard of okonomiyaki and someone told me it's quote-unquote Japanese pizza, I would expect something with a crust, probably tomato sauce, baked in an oven, you know, pizza. So, if,
pizza.
Although, I've had some real varying types of pizza out there. But anyway, so if we went to eat okonomiyaki and instead of pizza, I was served a kind of grilled flour-based food filled with cabbage and topped with mayonnaise, you know, okonomiyaki, you know, Paul.
You know,
I had never heard of this, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. No matter how delicious it was, I would still be disappointed. I feel that when vegan versions of meat products refer to the meat they're supposed to represent, it has a similar effect. I realize it's not exactly the same. Unlike the okonomiyaki example, meat substitutes are clearly modeled on an existing product, but I feel like it sets up false expectations and creates a kind of catch-22. People will complain that the vegan version doesn't taste exactly like meat, or will try to undermine a commitment to veganism with the tired, "if you don't like meat, why do you want to eat something that tastes like it" line. Even within the vegan community, there are people who won't eat meat substitutes because they are quote-unquote processed foods, even though they are often made from beans and vegetables. I think using a name that references the ingredients instead of the thing it's meant to replace would be a better choice. Take aquafaba. Sure, it just means water and bean in Latin, but if we only consider it in terms of its use, we would probably be calling it bean egg or something equally laughable. On the other hand, I get that it's convenient to use this kind of linguistic shorthand instead of having to explain what you're eating every time someone asks, and maybe in the future, vegan sausage will just be referred to as sausage, because no one will be eating animal products anymore. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. So, lengthy question there. Paul, do you have any?
One.
Yeah, I think it's needed to read the whole thing to get all the nuances of the question in there. So, again, thank you to Kelsey for writing in. Paul, what's your initial reaction to this question?
So, this is honestly something that I don't have like a clear-cut opinion on, because on one hand, like my first initial reaction is to say, but it's like you wouldn't, like, someone that's already vegan, if they've had this thing before, they know what it tastes like. You could call it whatever you want to call it. If they like the way it tastes, they're going to eat it. Like, it's the non-vegans that are literally just, there are so many people out there that are literally afraid to try something just because it has the word vegan in front of it. Like, this is a vegan cupcake. I've come across tons of people that won't try it just because it has that word in there. And I think if you came up with, I don't know, if you either called something what it was or came up with a new name for something, I'm worried that you would run into that similar effect in that, like, because already people don't want to eat tofu or people don't want to eat something that says like soy or something like that. I'm worried that it would have that similar effect where they would see this name of something that they don't recognize or they don't know what it means, and they would just be like, no, I'm not going to try that. That's like my initial reaction. But then on the other hand, I think Kelsey brings up an excellent point that I hear all the time, in that the vegan version doesn't taste exactly like what it's trying to be. And it's like 9 times out of 10, it's still good. It just doesn't taste exactly the same. So I think what Kelsey's saying does hold some value in that it sets up this unrealistic expectation, where what I try to tell people is that it's like, yeah, it doesn't taste exactly like chicken, but to be honest, I don't really remember what chicken tastes like, and this tastes freaking delicious, so I'm just going to keep eating this. I think I try to promote the idea that it's okay that there might be something out there that tastes, quote, better. I'm doing the quotation marks with my hands. There might be something out there that tastes better, but that doesn't mean you need to have it. So I would rather kind of promote that idea than the idea of saying like, this thing tastes exactly like prime rib, like you should eat this, because I think it is kind of creating this this expectation that lets people down, and then people in their mind say like, oh well, I can eat a prime rib, so I'm just gonna eat that. Why would I eat this other thing that doesn't taste like that? So I try and push people not to think that, but rather to think like, hey, this thing tastes good, So I don't really, like, the other thing might taste better, but I don't need to have it. I'm not, like, my life isn't, you know, ruined because I don't have that chicken in my life.
Classic non-answer.
Well, I don't know. Like, so those are, like, those are the two main things that are weighing in my head for both sides. I don't know. I'm still kind of, I'm not, even though I do feel strongly about the second thing that I said, I'm still kind of convinced that you do need to say, like, vegan sausage to get people to try it. I think what happens a lot of times, though, is people will just take it out of the bag and eat it and be like, this doesn't taste good. Whereas where I think a lot of these fake meats and fake cheeses and stuff excel is not by themselves, but when they're combined with a lot of other things. I don't know what this has to do with anything. So
kind of like also animal flesh doesn't taste good by itself.
Yeah.
Until you actually do something with it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is, as the email said, kind of a catch 22 because, I had a friend who, whenever I would be like, oh, I'm going to go have, you know, chicken and dumplings, he would be like, don't call it chicken and dumplings. You could just call it something else, but it's not chicken and dumplings. It's like the same camp of people that are like, there's no such thing as vegan cheese. You need milk to make cheese. It's got to, you should just call it something else. But then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm eating tempeh. And they're like, ooh, that's the, tempeh, what's that? What a weird name.
I do agree with them. Tempeh is gross.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, because like tofu is bean curd. And it's like, no wonder tofu is a much more palatable word for it. So,
yeah.
So I feel like there's no winning there. To me, I think that the easiest path to go down is to say, this is vegan chicken, you know, and instead of coming up with some entirely new word for it. Because I think it lets people know you're not going to miss anything. You know, it's not like, oh, instead of meat, eat this tempeh, eat this seitan. It's like, instead of this meat, eat this vegan meat, you know? To me, that's the easiest thing. And then it's kind of, it's like, go down the path, like you were saying, of educating people and be like, yeah, you know what? It's not going to taste exactly like this thing, but it does taste really good. And, you know, in my head, I'm always just like, do people realize how, I'm saying this within our little vegan bubble here, how much like a toddler throwing a tantrum they sound when they're like, this thing is 96% like what I want, but it's not 100% like what I want. So an animal needs to die now. Like, it's so frustrating that like, okay, you're just a few percentages away from getting it exactly like what you need, but instead you're just like, it's not exactly like what I want. It's just like the most like finicky, I'm throwing a tantrum, I have to have my way, or else animals are going to die type mentality to me. So that's just me venting a little bit, a little frustrating.
Tell them how it is, Andy.
That's how it is, Paul. So I think that coming up with other names just it instills the same type of mockery. You know, like people are like, oh, you eat aquafaba. Like, oh, that's such a weird, gross thing.
I will say, though, aquafaba is an amazing name. I usually just call it, I don't call it bean egg. I just call it chickpea juice usually. But aquafaba is a great name. If people can come up with like the names for vegan meats that sound like aquafaba, I would totally be all for that. Because you could just say like, hey, I made some aquafaba, and I wouldn't have any idea what it was. And I'd be like, give that to me.
Yeah.
Because that is a great name.
Side note, after Expo West, when I was reporting on that, on whatever episode that was, I tried the Fabanese, which is like the vegan mayo made with aquafaba, and I thought it was awesome. And I recently went and bought a jar at a store, and I tried it, and I didn't think it was quite as awesome.
Oh, no.
I retract my endorsement of aquafaba, or Fabanese.
Fabanese.
It's all right. It's no just mayo.
Yeah.
But what is?
What is?
So I guess to sum that up again, typical non-answer. For me, I feel like there's more benefit in calling something vegan chicken than it is to come up with like an entirely new word for it. Because I think that we have like logical explanations for these things. When someone says, if you don't like meat, why do you eat things that taste like meat? And that's like an opportunity for us to educate people that, you know, people aren't vegan because they don't like the taste of meat. People are vegan because they don't like what happens to animals. It's like, I like telling people like, oh, meat's great. I'm like, yeah, it's freaking delicious. Like, I love meat. It's like one of my favorite things to eat. But I realized I wasn't living in accordance with my ethics. And, you know, I wasn't down with, you know, taking an animal's life to get that taste and texture. So instead I get it from plants now. So I feel like those comments that come up are opportunities to educate people. Mm-hmm. But again, like you just said, Paul, if someone could come up with a name for vegan chicken that sounded as like effortless and not super weird as aquafaba, I guess I would be fine with it. But I think that as like a general rule, I'm totally fine with things being called vegan pepperoni, vegan sausage, vegan ham, whatever it might be.
I think it also, another reason why it's good is it for people that are not very culinarily skilled like myself, it kind of gives you an idea what to do with it. Like if someone's like a meat eater and you're trying to get them to use, and they agree that they're like, all right, I want to reduce my meat intake, it's an easy way to say like, hey, look, anytime you would eat sausage, just take this and make the same exact dishes you were making before, but with this sausage. Or anytime you were eating like chicken nuggets, here, just take these vegan chicken nuggets. So that's another reason why I think it's easy. Cause one of the things that I tell people, if anyone is ever like, oh, how do I go vegan? I just say like, eat literally the same things that you're eating now and just make these replacements. And I give them like the brands that I use. And I just say like, just eat what you're eating, the exact same meals you're eating now. So that's another reason why it's useful, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, it's just kind of in how we educate people to make sure they know, hey, don't expect the exact same thing as this. But it's like, has every burger you've ever had tasted exactly the same? You know, mm-hmm. Has every General Tso's chicken you ever had tasted exactly the same? You've probably had some really whack General Tso's chicken. So sort of like getting that, you know, people in that mindset that like, yes, food in general, some is going to taste good, some is not. And not everything is going to be exactly the same. Chicken Alfredo varies from restaurant to restaurant, you know. So instilling that in people, I think, can also help make that transition easier.
On this topic, Andy, do you know when that Beyond Meat hamburger meat stuff is going to be hitting the shelves? Because I've been, like, having to peruse through the meat aisle every single time I go to Whole Foods, and it is not fun.
You are referring to the Beyond Burger, the burger that bleeds, as Droopy Dog would say. So currently, as far as I know, and again, we are recording this a week before it's going to come out, so who knows what might change, but it was debuted at a store in Boulder, Colorado, at a Whole Foods there, and they have like a whole section dedicated to that burger. And there's big headlines. It sold out in an hour. I don't know how many they really stocked, if they're just pulling some Black Friday shit where they have like five of them and they sold them out real quick for the headlines. But that's, as far as I know, that's the only place you're able to get it. I did see someone, and I don't know who off the top of my head, I think maybe Mercy Franklin or something, posting that it's going to start to be sold, or is maybe now being sold, in one location in New York City as well. But anyway, I will be at the Colorado Veg Fest in Golden, Colorado, basically Denver, in a few weeks from now. So I am making it my business to go out of my way to go try that burger while I'm in the state. So I'll be sure to report back on that.
So what you're saying is I'm completely wasting my time by going there every single time that I go in the supermarket.
Yes.
All right.
I believe that is the case.
Good to know. All right. Let's move on.
Yes. Okay. So this next one is an Instagram comment. This comes from Lone Star in NYC, also known as Annie from Hudson's Hounds. I believe probably the same Annie that we read the comment from earlier, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So maybe we have several Annies that listen to the show. So, Paul, what's the comment say?
Is there a way that animal rights organizations can show up and show support for other social justice causes or oppressed communities without seeming like they're just trying to co-opt a message for their own agenda? For instance, vegan and animal rights groups marching in the pride parades every year with signs that say, "Go vegan, eat your veggies," or "Compassion for all."
This is a really good question. So thank you. Thank you, Ann, for that. This is something that I wrestle with. You know, and I worked for an organization that does do this and never know quite how to feel about it. I actually asked, I interviewed the Vegan Moes many, many episodes, and I did ask them about this. So just for the sake of hearing two people who are from that community, their opinion on the subject, I'm going to just play this sound clip. It's about a minute long. So let's listen to that really quick before we talk about it.
As far as these LGBT parades and events and being sort of populated with vegan movements, it seems logical that we should be there simply because if we truly believe that we are a community that is united under a rainbow flag, the rainbow flag literally meaning every color, every stripe of humanity under the spectrum, whether you're gay, whether you're lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning, intersexed, whatever, asexual, we have such a huge, huge, huge spectrum of humanity that chooses to identify under this big umbrella, this big rainbow of a community. Well, guess what? There are vegans in this community, and we are part of it. You know, as much as I hate the idea of it, if there was some sort of carnist pride group that were really happy that we're proud of oppressing and eating animals, and this were some group and this were some movement, if they were gay and lesbian, as much as it would disappoint me, I think that they should have a seat at the table at an LGBT pride parade too, simply because that has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that we are all unifying in our differences to share our common LGBTQ identity.
So that is the opinion of the Vegan Moes, Ethan and Michael. And I think that it's interesting that they were basically saying that, it kind of addressing if there are vegans who are a part of that community and they want to march in the parade to represent that, that they think that should be, you know, should obviously be something that's on the table for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think what Annie might be getting at is more vegans who are not a part of that community sort of going into the pride parades and handing out leaflets, marching in the parade themselves. And those seem like two very different things, although mm-hmm. maybe they're the same thing. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I kind of feel like the, 'cause Annie gave the examples of people holding signs and one of them was Compassion for All. I feel like that kind of rubs me the wrong way in the same way that, like, if I, as a white person, went to a Black Lives Matter rally and was holding a sign that said All Lives Matter, I feel like that is kind of like, that's the kind of the feeling that I get from it. 'Cause it's kind of like saying, like, oh, I know that there's this parade and this event for this specific like social justice movement, but like, let's talk about a different one at this right now. So it kind of I don't know, I think it kind of rubs me the wrong way when it's someone like not from that community coming into one of those events and then bringing a message that not really trying to tie it in, just kind of trying to push their own agenda. I would say that I think I'm against that.
Yeah, it definitely makes me uneasy. And I think especially that example of Compassion for All, because that's kind of, especially if you're marching in the parade, as a lot of these groups often do. And I know folks who are straight that march in those parades and post pictures of themselves. Look how, you know, great I am and how good of the work I'm doing is, and really kind of showing off and doing, I don't even want to call it like ally theater, 'cause it's almost not like they're being like, look how great of an ally I am to the LGBTQ community. They're just saying like, look how good of an animal advocate I am that I'm out here doing this parade as well. Yeah. And perhaps that is me assigning, you know, things to them that they're not actually thinking or saying, but that's certainly how it comes across to me. And I imagine how it would come across to other people as well. So like, I don't know if there's a definitive answer on this one. I'm sure that there's mixed reaction from the community, but, you know, if you're just kind of going in just to promote this, to promote your issue, whatever it might be, and you're not a part of that community, especially like that Compassion for All, it's almost being like, hey, it's cool that you're here for this, but come on, guys, Compassion for All, like, think about it, you know? And it does seem like it's kind of diverting attention away from what is a really important event for a lot of people. And the Vegan Mos do talk about the importance of Pride parades earlier in the interview, so you can definitely go check that out. We'll throw a link to that in our show notes as well, so you don't have to dig through the episodes to find it. But do you think that there's a way for vegans to appropriately show their support? Like, I'm wondering if it's just sort of like if you're in the parade or on the side and you're like, vegan support, you know, gay pride or whatever it might be, if you're just sort of there to be like, I support you and I'm vegan, or is that still too much ally theater? Is that still too much, look at, I am straight and I really care about you guys? Like, do you think there might be any possible way to do that?
Honestly, for me personally, I think the extent that I would feel comfortable promoting veganism at an event like this would just be to wear a vegan shirt. And if someone wants to come up to me and talk to me about it, I'm more than welcome to talk to them about it. But I don't think I would really feel comfortable like pushing the issue at all. And it's like, I mean, it's like, this is like one day. It's like you have every other day in the year that, or any other place to like, you can hand out flyers. You can like have signs and stuff at any other time. Well, I shouldn't say any other time, cause there's other times I would think it was inappropriate too. But my point is that if you're not like aggressively pushing veganism, if that's your thing, if you're not aggressively pushing it at one event, it's like, it's not, that's not really like the end of the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think for me personally, I could wear a vegan shirt, but that would be, and if someone wants to come up to me and talk to me about it, I just like I always am, I would be more than happy to have a conversation with them, but I would not feel comfortable pushing it.
So essentially your assessment, I was kind of thinking the same thing, that like, it, if you're there, wear a vegan t-shirt, like make that your presence, but otherwise don't take away from this celebration.
Yeah.
And then I was like, huh, where could everybody buy a vegan t-shirt to wear to this parade? This whole podcast has been the long con to sell everyone t-shirts so they'll feel like good allies at Pride parades. Cool. Well, yeah, I think that about sums it up. That's a pretty good assessment of the situation. This one is probably one that, of anything we're talking about, people would probably have the most differing opinions on. So be sure to write in and let us know what you think. Did you have any other thoughts on that?
No, I think I said all I had to say.
So then let's move on. And next one, this is an email from Shelby M. It's, you know, another paragraph of text, so bear with us. But I've got to read the whole thing so we get all the nuance in. Shelby writes, I'm about to finish episode 33, and your mention of Gary Francione made me think of something that my vegetarian boyfriend and I have discussed. Gary Francione often takes a shit on mainstream organizations and single-issue campaigns. Is it wrong to ask that both factions get along? As you two discussed in episode 33, graphic images work for some and kind images work for others. Animal rights encompasses such a massive spectrum of issues that it feels like it would be horribly daunting to go with the abolitionist approach. Like, I imagine their little Go Vegan booklets are closer to books. Single-issue campaigns have the benefit of easing people into the movement. For instance, someone who is against fur, you can tell them, well, since you care about the fur trade and those animals, maybe be interested in learning about the wool industry. This allows people the time needed to change and deal with their feelings, opinions, and ideas. We felt both were very valid, and rather than shitting on one another, let's get along. For the animals and future vegans and animal advocates, I'm extremely interested in hearing your opinions. So, upon reading this, I think perhaps I am a bit closer to this divide in the movement, and maybe I should answer it first.
Yes, I agree.
So this is something that, as kind of an everyday casual vegan, as I was for many years before I started working for nonprofits and, you know, doing Compassion Co. has got me a lot closer to a lot of people working in organizations. And I now go to the Animal Rights Conference, which I'll be at this weekend and we'll report on next episode. I didn't realize that there was such a huge divide within the vegan community in my early days as a vegan. I realized some people thought different tactics would work, but there's, for those out there not sort of that have not attended the conference, which is the vast majority of people, because only about, you know, 1 to 3,000 people go and aren't really tapped into this world. It was kind of like this veil was like lifted from my eyes when I realized how stark this divide was. But there's, you know, the welfare camp, there's the abolition camp. And there's a lot of differing opinions on what each of those actually means. For me personally, I feel like you're not really a welfarist unless you're someone that goes out there and advocates for consumers to consume quote unquote humane meat, eggs, dairy, etc. But essentially, it's a fight of bigger cages or no cages. And like realistically, everybody that's attending, like say the Animal Rights Conference, wants no cages, but there's just a big disagreement on how to get there. And so there are folks like Gary Francione, who we have mentioned on previous episodes. We haven't like really gotten into him too much, but you know, he is just very I'm trying to put this like delicately, he's very strongly, you can only advocate for veganism, and anything short of that is an absolute betrayal of the animals. And then there are folks like groups at, say, the Humane League. We talked about the chick culling victory a few episodes ago, who think that taking these smaller steps is the way to get us to these empty cages. Part of Gary Francione's sort of imperative is saying that single issue campaigns are not the way to animal liberation. And that's what Shelby's email is getting at. I struggle with some single issue campaigns because, like we were talking about in the chick culling episode, you know, we worry about certain things reinforcing that there's an okay way to use animals. But I think ultimately single issue campaigns are things that are winnable and allow us to get victories and are often really important stepping stones to bigger victories. A lot of people talk the talk of can't we all just get along and that we need to support each other regardless of interest and tactics. But if you feel like someone's tactic is actively harming animals, I think it's really hard to just sit there silently and be like, well, they're also vegan. They're also working for the same end goal. And I need to just shut up about it if I think what they're doing is going to be harming animals or like counterproductive to the movement. So I'm kind of wary of calls to just sort of let everyone get along and let everyone just sort of let everybody else do what they want to do. With that said, I used to really like what Francione had to say. But the more I followed on Facebook, he just seemed like the only thing he did was criticize other activists and what they were doing. And I think there's room for criticizing activists and activism and tactics. But if that's the only thing that you're doing, and I know he's writing books and giving talks and whatnot, but if your public face is only shitting on things that are happening, to use the language of the email, I'm just not down with that. I can't get behind it. It seems like a very like bullying thing to do. So ultimately, I feel like there's a place for kind of sitting back and letting everyone get along, but there is a place of, you know, a time to be constructive and to criticize others and in their activism. And I think that we owe it to the animals to use the most effective tactics that are out there. And if someone is doing something that is going to be counterproductive, I do think that we need to speak up. But I think it's that balance of knowing when it's okay to sit back, even if someone's doing something that you don't think is like the absolute best thing possible, but you can recognize that there is some value in it. And then there is a time when you're like, this organization, especially if they're using methods to promote veganism that are relying on other oppressions. I think those are especially times when we should be speaking up. So I do think that there's value in single issue campaigns, and I think that anyone that paints them as, you know, wholesale bad for animals, I think that that's really short-sighted. And I do think that single issue campaigns are a really great way to get people into the movement in general. I disagree with say, you know, doing cage-free initiatives on college campuses. There's a group that's kind of like one of their main things that they start doing when they get campus coordinators going. But it has been pointed out to me that it's like an easily winnable campaign, and it's something that gets a victory under a belt, gets a local student group, you know, some kind of clout with their school because they've got something achieved. And I'm like, okay, I guess I can't really agree with their end goal, but I do see the value in that. So, and again, mm-hmm. typical beard vegan non-answer there. Paul, is all of this like totally new to you?
I mean, just from hanging out with you enough, I get like the gist of it, but I'm definitely not versed enough to kind of, I mean, I could tell you what my opinion is on it, but that it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't really matter.
Paul, nothing we say matters, but we want to hear what you have to say.
No, that's all right. I just meant like I could tell you my opinion on like welfare versus abolitionist, but I feel like that's not really what the question was asking. The question was kind of what you answered, which was like, can we get along with each other, or should we get along with each other? I mean, I think the thing that I will say though is to reinforce what you said in that there are times when we should be critical about how vegans are approaching their animal advocacy, which I mean is 99% of what we talk about is being critical about vegan like tactics and stuff like that. But I would like to think that we kind of give our reasoning why we are critical of it. We open it up for discussion, and that we kind of give like alternatives. We're not just saying like, I would hope we're not just coming across as saying like, you're wrong, stop doing that, without kind of explaining ourselves and saying what you could do differently to change it up a little bit, to do what we think is better advocacy or more effective. So yeah, I'll just reinforce that you just said that it's okay to be critical about other people's approaches.
I think also there's probably a difference between having a difference of opinion and getting along. I think that I am certainly friends with plenty of people within this movement that I am not in lockstep with their way of thinking, and I mean, I often find those discussions to be way more fruitful and intellectually stimulating than when I'm talking with people who absolutely agree with me in every line of my thinking. I do think that it strengthens our movement when we have a diversity of opinions out there. And I think it's important that we can not always agree, but we can still remain friends and we can still support each other. You know, that doesn't mean you have to publicly be like, I think this campaign is like the greatest thing ever. But I think that it means that it's important for us to not make enemies of the people that we disagree with, which is, I guess that's kind of what I see in certain camps, is that they create, as we were talking about in the Rama Ganesan interview, that enemy image of people. And they think that they have the absolute worst intentions. And you know, I disagree with a lot of tactics of mainstream organizations, but I don't for a second believe that they're just doing things to get donations. I do believe that they think what they're doing is the best way to achieve their goals, which is, at the end of the day, total animal liberation. And when I assume the worst of them, then it doesn't lead to anything productive at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question, Shelby, but definitely
but it was something.
Definitely got a lot of thoughts out on this particular divide within the animal rights movement. Something I don't think we've really explicitly addressed in the past, because it is such a touchy subject for a lot of people.
Yeah.
All right. So our final email is a two-parter. This comes from Jennifer L., who wrote us a very long and very lovely email. And in the end, it included a couple of questions. So question one, part one here, says, Jennifer says, I work at a food pantry once a month. It is supported by my church as well as other churches, and there are always people I know and like working alongside me. Most of the things distributed are canned, dry and boxed goods, as well as bread. Milk, meat, frozen and fresh packed, and canned salmon are given out as well. The way it works, people tell me if they want a particular item or not, and I put it in their cart. We walk through together like you might at a very small store helping someone to shop. So there's no way I cannot do the meat part if I'm going to be helpful at all. Question, can/should vegans work in a food pantry that is very much not vegan? Is it better to help people eat something than for them not to be able to eat at all? What do you think, Paul?
To answer the second question, yes. Yes, I would say it's better to help people eat something. I think that, and I would answer yes to the first question. Should vegans work in a food pantry that's very much not vegan? Because you, like, I would say work at that food pantry, and if you are going to donate foods, just donate, like, the canned goods, the, like, bread, the plenty of vegan stuff that you can, that food pantries will take that is vegan. Like, donate that stuff, and then if you're working there and you have to, I would say if you have to distribute the meat, that's fine. I personally don't think that that is, like, the appropriate time to be promoting veganism. Like I said, I think that you can support the food pantry in terms of donations by giving just vegan food. But I don't know. It's tough, too, because I think I don't really know how if a food pantries all run. I imagine that they vary a lot. I don't know. I wouldn't feel comfortable kind of telling them how to do their biz, especially since I'm not, like, a part of this food pantry. So I would say yes to both questions. It's okay to work in a food pantry. It's okay to work in a food pantry, and it's okay to help people eat something rather than not eating anything at all. Definitely. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, I think it's important to show compassion for others, even if it's not always 100%. You know, a situation that is, you know, totally perfect and in line with our ideals. And things like this often mean that we do have to kind of, you know, bridge that empathy gap that exists within ourselves. And I think it's important for us to be helping others. And if you listen to last week's episode, we do have the interview with Michelle Carrera from Chili's on Wheels, who looked at this exact situation and said, I'm not okay with that. But instead of doing nothing, I'm going to go make my own food and distribute that for people. You know, it's not a food pantry. It's more like a soup kitchen. But, you know, so I think that of the three options, which are Michelle's, which I think is the best, but obviously requires a lot of time and effort and money, which is creating the food and supplying it for people, or working in a pantry to help people where often there will be non-vegan choices, but you can help stock it with vegan options, or just doing nothing. I think doing nothing at all is probably the worst option.
Yeah.
In regards to this specific issue.
And even if you aren't able to donate food, I would still say keep working at the food pantry. Even if you're not specifically able to donate purely vegan food. 'Cause I don't know, when I think about it, it's like, we're still very much in a society that is centered around eating meat, in a society where eating meat is such a big part of it. And like when dealing with people that are coming to like a food pantry, it's like, that really isn't on, like, that's not, I feel like that's not the appropriate time to kind of bring in veganism. And you kind of just have to accept, it's like, this person is just most likely just trying to get by. And they're going to take what they can get. So it's like, this wouldn't be the time.
Yeah. And, it reminds me of an interview, I think in like episode four or five, somewhere way back in the beginning, with Tommy Knowles, who was, doing wildlife defense, and, often, you know, that led to them helping to reinforce barricades to, the Sacred Headwaters where people were coming in to hunt. And they're showing solidarity with indigenous peoples. And that meant sitting around a campfire while they were consuming animals. And that didn't mean that, you know, the people doing the Wildlife Defense League had to eat that. But it sort of meant that sometimes showing solidarity with oppressed groups is not always going to be 100% in line with your ideals. But it's still an important thing to be doing. And you never know what conversations are going to lead, you know, to are going to like sprout from that. And certainly if you box yourself off and you're only in your vegan bubble, you're only going to be spreading veganism to people. You're preaching to the choir. So it's important for us to be getting out into the world. And maybe someone will go vegan because of that, but don't get hung up on that. I think, you know, it's important to be helping oppressed groups, even if not everything you're doing is 100% vegan. You know, work and find ways to make it as much in line with your ideals as possible. But, you know, I think that you shouldn't feel bad about doing something to help others, because there are so many people that are doing nothing to help others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So to Jennifer, I hope that you continue working at the food pantry, because it's a really awesome thing to do. And it's I think it's so cool that there are like Chili's on Wheels and like Food Not Bombs that have that are doing a similar thing, but have like the kind of vegan or vegetarian spin to it. And but obviously not everyone has that in their area. Not everyone can do that. And not everyone, very few people can like make this their life and create something like this, like with Chili's on Willy's. So kudos to that.
Kudos to Chili's on Willy's.
Kudos to Chili's on Willy's.
All right. What's the last half of this email, Paul?
So the second part says, I anticipate turning my kitchen completely vegan when my two kids return to college in the fall. Although I'm not sure if I will ever get my husband off dairy yogurt. This sounds like my dad. On the plus. Sorry, that was me. That was me, Paul. Here we go. Continuing the email. On the plus, he does drink almond milk, no dairy milk. Ooh, continues to sound like my dad. All right. One kid is vegetarian, but partakes of cheese fairly heavy. The other kid is an omnivore. Question. Do you think that this is reasonable to maintain a vegan? Sorry. Question. Do you think that it is reasonable to maintain a vegan kitchen when they return for breaks next year? Do you have any advice about this or know any people who have had similar situations? Am I a vegan if I provide my husband with dairy yogurt? I have seen some online forums that will not let you join if you ever buy anything not vegan, even if it is for someone else. Dear Lord, wouldn't that mean if your family went out for dinner and people ate non-vegan, you couldn't pick up the check? I don't really find this to be an attitude that promotes family harmony or shows that vegans aren't all, quote, crazy and inflexible. So, Andy, what do you think?
All right. It's a lot of questions in a row, so I'm going to try and work through them right now. First question, do you think it's reasonable to maintain a vegan kitchen when they return for breaks next year? I think absolutely. I think it's your household. You're kind of setting the rules for that. And I think that, you know, if you just explain this is something that is important to me and you can do whatever you want outside of the house, but while we're here, please don't bring anything in that is not vegan. You know, maybe you could be flexible in some regards, like if they go out to eat and they don't finish their meal or something and they get to keep their leftovers in the fridge. But to me, that's not unreasonable, but it just depends on your family dynamic, because that is going to vary wildly from person to person. Unfortunately, I don't know people that are in this exact situation. I do know people who, you know, are married to or you know, seriously dating someone who is not vegan, and they have agreed to keep a vegan kitchen in their house. And so their partner does whatever they want outside of the house, but in the kitchen, they agree vegan. This is a vegan sanctuary, so no non-vegan food. But you know, you're going to know your kids and how to talk to them better than we will. But I think that we could back you up in saying, at least I think it's not unreasonable to expect to maintain a vegan household once they have left.
Can I say something?
I was just going to ask what you think, Paul.
Oh, well, thank you. And I was going to say, again, I'm in the same boat as Andy. Have never been in a situation like this before. What I would suggest, though, as someone who has never been in this situation and has no knowledge of it at all, what I would suggest is try and make the same foods that maybe you made them before, or the same foods that they like eating, just the vegan version of it. So I would say buy those fake meats, get like, I don't know, some vegan mac and cheese going, whatever it is that you ate before. I would say try to do the vegan version. That might be less of like a massive transition for them. And I would also say, because I feel like in the opposite situation, when it's like a family that eats meat and it's like the kid that wants to go vegan, a lot of times I hear people will say like, well, if you want to eat vegan, then you're cooking for yourself. I would say don't do that in reverse in this position. So don't tell your kids, if you probably weren't going to anyways, but I would say avoid saying something like, well, if you want to eat meat, like you have to go do it yourself. Instead, like encourage that, because I feel like the end goal would be hopefully to get them to become vegan, or at least more eat less meat or no meat, and or eat more vegan. So it's like I would encourage them, instead of saying like, you're on your own if you want to do this, say like, hey, come on, like I'm going to cook for you. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be great. Look, it's your favorite. It's a hamburger helper mac and cheese, but it's vegan instead, and it's going to be good. So that's what I would suggest too. You probably weren't going to do that anyways, but I don't know. I feel like it's worth saying.
All right. And okay, so moving on to the next little question in here. Am I a vegan if I provide my husband with dairy yogurt? And I would say you're still a vegan, Paul.
Yeah, I definitely think you're still vegan. I think you are doing... Like, we've actually said in a previous episode, I believe we've said, like, don't worry about, like, don't try and convert your partner or your husband or your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever. Don't try and get them to be vegan, or your family members, we've said. And I do still agree with that. I do still think... Like, there are millions of people out there for me to talk to about veganism. If I don't talk to this one person, I'm not a bad vegan for it. And in fact, just by since they have such a close proximity to me, like, they're going to be exposed to more than the normal meat eater anyways. So I would say, I guess don't worry about the yogurt. I'm sure if you haven't already, like, try some of the vegan yogurts. Like, they all taste to me, they're all very different, and I like some of them sometimes for like specific reasons. Like, some of them are too watery, but then sometimes I'm like, oh, that's good. And some of them are too thick, and then other times I'm like, oh, I wanted a thick yogurt. So maybe try a few different ones, and maybe he'll find one that is acceptable and that he'd be able to eat instead of dairy yogurt. So maybe try that. But other than that, I mean, obviously we wouldn't. Like, dairy yogurt is not any reason to have, like, big fights about or anything like that, I don't think, in this specific situation.
Yeah, yeah. And so the extension of this question is, like, that, you know, saying if we go out to eat, can I not pick up the check if they get non-vegan food? I don't think that it invalidates your veganism. My personal stance is that I won't pay for food that is not vegan. But I also am not like in a situation where I have you know, a grandparent in like a nursing home and they like will only eat this one thing. And like, you're the one that's in charge of the groceries. Like, I'm in a situation where I'm able to be kind of flexible on these things, but, or inflexible, I should say. But for instance, like if I'm going out, I'll say with friends, I'll be like, hey, I'd love to treat you to dinner as long as you buy something that's vegan, or we're all getting Starbucks. Hey, as long as you get the soy milk, then I'll totally, you know, buy your coffee for you. And I feel okay with that, but I also wouldn't give anyone a hard time that didn't do that, that did pick up the check for their, you know, for their family or something. If you're going out to eat.
Glad you feel that way, Andy, because that's what I do.
Paul, I think we need to stop having this podcast.
No.
I believe that it does go against veganism as a philosophy if you are enabling someone else to, you know, eat those things. But again, it's like we live in this imperfect world, and I think that there's a lot of value to maintaining close personal relationships, friendships, family relationships, if they're your support network and people that make you happy and all that stuff. And I think that compromising those, I think ultimately that could do more harm than good. If someone just becomes super isolated because they've driven away all their friends and family because they've taken such a hard stance on certain issues, And then they're just like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to give up and I'm going to go back to being not vegan because of that, because I just feel so lonely and isolated. I don't think that's going to do anyone any good. I don't think that's doing animals any good either.
And also, one of the other questions was about the online forums that won't let you join if you ever buy anything that's not vegan, even if it's for someone else. I feel like that's absurd. And it's like, that's completely just creating this gated, making veganism this gated community that we've mentioned before in other episodes. And that's not, it's like, congratulations, you've like isolated all the vegans in one place. So it's like, you're never going to get other people to be vegan because you're all just only by yourselves and you're not talking to anyone else. You're only talking to other vegans who feel this exact same way. It's like, it's not really going to make new vegans.
Yeah, or the only time you talk to non-vegans is when you're yelling at them and chastising them for being such an evildoer.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy.
So, you know, it's these are things where we have room to improve upon them, and they're opportunities for us to talk to our loved ones about these issues. To bring it back to what Paul said, I don't think we are saying don't try to get your loved ones and close family members or whatnot to go vegan, but more so don't get hung up on it if they aren't
yeah.
receptive
yeah,
of
yeah,
it
yeah.
and don't make it, if you can help it, don't make that like the breaking point for when you're just like, well, I'm not going to come to Thanksgiving anymore. You know, don't let those conversations be the reason why you like break down what could potentially otherwise be important relationship in your life. Not everyone's family relationships are important, obviously, and people can have some really abusive or bad situations. So I'm not saying, you know, maintain a relationship with your parents or brother, sister at any cost, and it's important no matter what. But if it is something that is important to you, I would say don't let these things divide you, because if you do care about them going vegan, you certainly leaving the situation, leaving their life because of it, that's obviously not going to get them to go vegan.
Yeah. Well put, Andy.
Yes. All right. Well, I think we are scraping the bottom of the mailbag. There's nothing left in there for us to pull out, Paul, in our physical mailbag that we actually have.
Yeah, these were all letters that were sent to us, and then they said, hey, it's Wendy here, go to thecommentist.com. And we said, oh, thank you. And we went to thecommentist.com and saw her comment. So, all physical letters.
Yes. So, thank you to everyone that wrote in. And again, if you want to reach us and comment on this episode, any other episode, send us an article that you read and you're wondering what we think about it, you want us to dissect it, we always love getting topics from people. We've had some really great episodes off of emails like that. You can reach us at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. That's sort of the most direct, and make sure it stays in our periphery. But also you can reach us at thecommentist.com, where you can find all of our back catalog, as well as a bunch of other really good podcasts. And you can comment on individual episodes. And you can always reach out to us on the Instagram. And so the Instagram is @thebeardedvegans. And pictures of almost all the food that we talk about are also posted up there. So you can follow along with our food adventures, get notifications of new episodes. And also we make a call for questions for the mailbag episode on there as well. So be sure to give us a follow on Instagram.
Very nice. Andy, where are you going to be?
I will be at the Colorado Veg Fest July 23rd and 24th in Golden, Colorado. I will be at the Pittsburgh Veg Fest on July 30th. I'll be at the Western New York Veg Fest in Buffalo, New York, August 7th. And August 20th, I'll be at Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore, Maryland. And you can get all the information on those events at CompassionCo.com. It's just CompassionCO.com. And come on out. Say hi. Let us know what you think of the show. That's all from me, Paul. Anything else from you?
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, hey, Andy, enjoy that beach right now.
Yeah, I'm one block from the beach. I'm going to go jump in the waves. Fight it like little Pete on Pete and Pete.
All right, you do that, Andy.
Just picture that.
All right. I don't think we got anything else, so I only got one last thing to say.
What is that, Paul?
Goodbye. Oh, no, that wasn't it. We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Mailman.
and they're wonderful for blah. And they're, yeah. Hold on 1 second. Parking, like, police just came. I have to go renew my meter real quick.
Okay. All right. Andy Tabar, everybody.